Welcome back to the Renaissance Ray, episode 123, Leonardo da Vinci and the Naked Children, part 2.
That's all you need. Naked Children makes everybody happy. No, I shouldn't have said that.
That was his secret. Whenever, you know, he wrote something and he's like,
we're losing the audience. We're losing. What did we do? Put out the Naked Children. Yeah. go.
He was working on something and he'd spent like months working on it. He's like, it's just not, there's just something missing. I can't work out what it is. It's just,
I can't put my tongue on it. Yeah. It's.
Hey, you in the loincloth, come over here. Something I didn't mention in the last episode, we were talking about all of these fabulous moving stages that he had and you know, mountains that opened up to reveal Hades and live fires with people emerging out of the fires and these incredible plays that he would put on all while he was dressed up as a woman. And one of the things I forgot to mention, one of the movable stages that he had included two circular amphitheaters that were initially facing each other, closed into a sphere, and then they would swing open and rotate so they'd be back to back.
Oh my God.
So the audience, you know, would be sitting there and then woo, it'd swing around and you'd be back to back and you could do a reach around to everybody and then it would swing back around again.
Impressive.
Like, that doesn't exist today as far as I know. Like, this was serious. No expense spared level of entertainment. Really amazing stuff. And it was good paying work, as we said in the last episode. And yes, unlike paintings, performances had real deadlines. Like there was a real wedding. The date had been set.
Good point.
His perfectionism couldn't get in the way here because these things had to be delivered. And as was said earlier, like whenever he got stuck, like with a painting, when his perfectionism kicked in, he could just walk away.
Put the brush down.
When his perfectionism kicked in, he goes, there's something missing. Just throw in some naked children, right? So he figured out how to... Look, it's not perfect, but it's got naked children, so it's going to be okay.
Win-win. Yeah, it's all good. So he did figure something out. Good for him. But yeah, he's got to produce. Good for him.
He supposedly designed mechanical birds for stage productions, wings for actors who would fly up into the air. Right. And these things sort of spurred him in his investigations into, you know, the flight of birds and building his aeroplane models and those sorts of things that we see in the notebooks. His interest in these things started, it would seem, serious interest anyway, in his building things for the stage. Now, as we know, though, he originally was sent to Milan by Lorenzo de' Medici as some sort of a musical gift to Ludovico.
Right. Yeah. A musical envoy. That's the name of our next band. Musical envoy.
Her next album. Musical envoy. I wonder if that's still a thing. Like, do you, like, if you're trying to, like, when Trump was trying to build a bridge with North Korea.
Oh, he should have sent.
Did he send who? Young Jet?
Joan Jett.
Oh.
Yeah, from the 80s.
It's really fucking random. Yeah. She loves rock and roll. I mean, why not? Leo Sayer is British / Australian.
I didn't know that. Fucking love him. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry I didn't mean to interrupt your flow.
You ever hear my interview with him?
You interviewed Leo Sayer?
Yeah, you've never heard that?
No, it's fucking awesome. I love that man. I love his voice. I love his music.
First album.
I cry all the time. Right?
First album I ever bought was More Than I Can Say.
Oh, love that song.
Actually, album's Living in a Fantasy, and it's a great it's a great album. It holds up. Yeah, no, it's amazing. He lives in Australia now. He lives in
fucking awesome
Sydney, I think. But when he first moved here, it was 2008. I know that because I just met Chrissy. It was just before I met Chrissy, I think. The interview was just about to happen or just happened afterwards.
Right.
I got to chat with Leo Sayer for an hour. And such a sweetheart, such a lovely guy. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Musical genius. Musical genius.
Just great, yeah, great guy. Like in the 70s and 80s, man, he was huge, right? And he just,
Right. The next album we'll call Leo Lovers. I don't know. I'll work on it. It's there. It's the seed. Oh,
maybe we should get Leo Sayer on the show to talk about Leonardo da Vinci and see what if they have anything in common. And yeah.
If he could bring a liar.
Does he like sucking dick? Oh, I don't know.
I'm not going to.
Well, he probably knows Cliff Richard. We know Cliff Richard likes sucking dick.
Yes.
Allegedly.
So. Yeah. It's a topic we'll get to.
So Leonardo went to Milan, taking along a lyre or a lute that he had designed himself.
Of course, he did.
It was something he was presenting to Ludovico and probably going to perform there.
Mm-hmm.
So not just a producer of pageants, but also a very talented musician
and engineer.
This lyre apparently was to be held like a fiddle.
Right.
Had five strings that were going to be played with a bow and two strings that were going to be plucked. So a little bit of blop, 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 blop.
Complicated. But
very complicated.
That's the way his brain worked, right? But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the lyre, Ray, has been around forever. I looked into the history of the lyre.
Right.
Apparently, it comes from somebody whose pants were on fire. The early reference to the word lyre is in Mycenaean Greek, rurotai, meaning lyrists, and it's written in Linear B script. That's how old it is. The English word comes to us via Latin, which comes to us via Greek.
Wow.
The classical lyre, people have probably seen it on ancient Greek pottery.
Right.
It's got a hollow body. It's shaped like a U with a couple of little things coming out the top, and it's got a bar across the top.
Right.
Top of the raised arms, and then the strings coming down to the hollow body or the sound chest, the sound box down the bottom. They were often made out of turtle shell originally, that bit of it.
Wow, poor turtles.
In the early days.
Yeah.
And you held it next to your body. You plucked it like a harp.
Right.
It didn't have a fretboard like a guitar or anything like that. This is a lyre. The strings were made of gut. You tuned it with pegs was one way of doing it, or you could change where you put it on the crossbar was another way of doing it.
Right.
A lute, on the other hand, sort of developed out of the lyre. It's a plucked string instrument with a neck. It can be fretted or unfretted, like ding, ding, a little bit like your ding, 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 that kind of thing, right?
Right.
Now, Vasari, writing about Leonardo's lyre that he took to Milan, said it had a very bizarre and unusual design that he'd made with his own hands, mainly out of silver, in the shape of a horse skull.
Of course it did.
Made so that the harmony might be fuller and more sonorous in tone.
Do you think he killed a horse, took its skull out, blew into it, said, "I really like the sound of this. I think we're onto something here." And then his next instrument was horse skull shaped. It could be. Wasn't there. I don't know.
And he was, after he fucked the eye hole of it. Yeah.
Anyway, it was discovered.
So Leonardo was not only a great musician, he was probably the best musician in Italy at the time. He won a contest in Florence before he left Florence, I assume, for one of his performances, wrote his own songs, performed love poems by Petrarch.
Damn.
A guy called Paolo Giovo, who was a famous humanist and physician, a contemporary of Leonardo's, met him in Milan. Wrote, "He was a connoisseur and marvelous inventor of all beautiful things, especially in the field of stage performances, and sang masterfully to his own accompaniment on the lyre. When he played the lyre with the bow, he miraculously pleased all princes. And he was always surrounded with naked children." I mean,
it's my request. Yes.
Yeah.
I want white roses.
So, like, we don't...
Naked children.
See, another thing. We don't think of Leonardo as the fabulous producer of pageants.
Right.
Or as the greatest musician of his time. He was Eddie Van Halen.
Yes.
Meets Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Right. And David Lee Roth, because he had a beautiful singing voice, so he could play instruments, build instruments, invent instruments.
No one's ever accused David Lee Roth of having a beautiful singing voice.
Well, he can sing. Maybe not beautiful. Maybe Roth isn't the way to go. But since you did Eddie, I went Roth. But the point is, he was just born with this freaking talent, and it's just staggering. And this is just one little tiny aspect of his life that he was brilliant at.
What's fascinating to me is, like, obviously Leonardo has been blown up into giant-sized status in the last 500 years. We think of him as this immortal genius. But when you have contemporaries, this isn't even Vasari writing 50 years later. This is a contemporary who met him saying that he was, you know, masterful and a connoisseur and, you know,
the best.
Brilliant at everything that he touched kind of thing. It's pretty amazing that he was so highly esteemed for things that we don't even tend to know that he did.
The big stuff.
Like, I told Chrissy over dinner last night, by the way, he was the greatest lyre player and singer of Italy at the time. She goes, fuck off. Of course he was. I fucking hate him. Like, he was just...
That was my response.
He was... Eddie Van Halen meets Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra.
Meets Elon Musk. Meets who's the greatest living painter? I don't know. Who'd be the living painter these days? I don't know. Anyway,
all of them.
He's Cirque du Soleil. Right. He's David Lynch.
He's good looking.
You know,
don't forget that he was considered very good looking. Beautiful hair.
Very good looking.
Nice body. Sexy full beard. Now I'm getting turned on, but the point is, he was a total package. But he didn't take he didn't take it for granted, because obviously he pursued a lot of different things in his life. He should be commended for that.
Unfortunately, there are no musical compositions in his notebooks, so we can't play along. You know, I would have loved to have heard a modern rendition of a Leonardo song.
I interpreted that differently. I didn't think it wasn't as important as some of his other things, because I think everything was important to this guy. That's the way his brain worked. I just assumed that when there wasn't anything in his book, it's because he just fucking made most of it up on the spot, because he had that kind of skill, and so that wouldn't be worth his time to write. When the time comes, I'll think of something. Don't worry about it. That's not what you write in a book. So you skip over it.
Yeah.
That was my interpretation.
Yeah, it was like slam poetry. He was like a bit Lin-Manuel Miranda. He was freestyling.
Right.
He'd say, give me an idea. Anyway, someone in the court, give me an idea.
Right.
They'd say, democracy.
Yeah.
He'd be like, right, democracy. Democracy. Okay. Naked children.
Defenseless. Need protection. I'm making shit up. I don't know. They don't need clothes. They need protection. They need your love. They need democracy. Some shit. I don't know.
They come up to my knee. It's a perfect height. Drop it down all night. Give them the vote. Take it down their throat.
Show them the goat.
C. Democracy.
Oh, and we're done.
See, if we're like, I'm writing that down in my notebook. That was genius, right?
Yeah. Oh my god. Oh, speaking of which, I know that you kind of use inspiration in these shows to come up with the title of it. I was thinking about this one, or maybe the one before it. I'm not sure about the king of side hustles, because, like you said, I mean, we know him as an engineer, a painter, the notebooks or whatever. But now he's doing things, and he's also excelling at things that we don't think of. We don't think about the pageantries. We don't think about the all the plays that goes on and the singing and the musical performances as well. But again, this guy can do it all, and he's doing whatever it takes to get in the good graces of Ludovico. He's got tons of side hustles. He probably invented side hustles, and again, this is just another one that he can do and do it better than anybody else.
I make a note: the king of side hustles.
King of side hustles.
Yeah. Yeah, like apparently the thing was like a lot of his paintings. He had this great knack for combining two things that shouldn't go together.
Right,
like history and comedy. Mm-hmm. They said it couldn't be done, but you know,
yeah,
we did it.
Yeah,
Vasari talking about his music says, since by nature he possessed a lofty and graceful spirit like us,
right,
he sang divinely, improvising his own accompaniment on the lyre.
Why not?
No naked children in my lap makes me hard.
And then I take a nap. Yeah.
I was going there. Yeah, take a nap.
I'm going to jail.
Measuring dicks with my mouth. Don't you judge me, it is my house.
Nice.
Vasari recounts one particular performance that Leonardo gave at the Milan court in 1494.
Right.
When Ludovico was finally officially crowned Duke after the unfortunate immoderate coitus death of his nephew.
Right, oops. Right.
He wrote, Leonardo, with great fanfare, was brought to the Duke to play for him. Since the Duke had a great liking for the sound of the lyre, and Leonardo brought the instrument which he had built with his own hands.
Yeah.
With this, he surpassed all the musicians who came there to play. In addition, he was the best improviser of verses of his time.
Damn.
So, he's the best musician and rapper
right.
in Florence, in Milan. And this is 1494. He's been in Milan for maybe 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of opportunities to do other things, but this is what, you know, Ludovico doesn't say, come and, like, do a quick painting.
Right.
Like, for Australians, Rolf Harris used to do on his TV show in the 70s and 80s. He'd, do you know who Rolf Harris is? Timey Kangaroo Down Sport?
I've heard that, yeah, I've heard the name, heard that, yeah. That's all I know, but, yeah.
He's an Australian performer who, painter and right. musician, songwriter, performer who was big, famous here, went to the UK in the 60s and 70s, was huge over there as well, had TV shows, painted a portrait of the Queen
nice.
In real time on TV, that kind of thing. But on his TV show, he had a number of famous songs here. Tie me kangaroo down, sport, tie me kangaroo down. Time a kangaroo down, sport, time a kangaroo down. And I'm Jake the Peg, diddle, 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 with me extra leg, diddle, 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 It was a guy with a third leg. It was his dick, really, but he called it his leg. He used to, on his TV show, he'd have like a wall or a canvas behind him that was the size of a wall.
Right.
And he had a paint roller that you paint a house with, yep. and he'd be just dip it in paint. And he just, while he's talking to a live audience, he would paint a portrait of a face or right. something
Jesus.
With a paint roller live on stage while he was talking to the audience. Incredibly talented. Unfortunately,
right.
had a penchant for sex with underage children and went to jail in England, I think, about 10 years ago or so.
Should have been a priest.
So...
Oh, sorry. But still, that's multi-talented.
Still alive. He's 91. In July 2014, at the age of 84, he was sentenced to 5 years and 9 months in prison on 12 counts of indecent assault on four female victims during the 1970s and 80s.
Right.
He was released on license in 2017 after serving nearly 3 years. On one count, he was over. That was overturned. But yeah, there was all like underage. Were they all underage? No.
Yeah.
Charged with 9 counts of indecent assault involving 2 girls between the ages of 14 and 16 years, and 4 counts alleging production of innocent child images.
Right.
It's funny, he never painted those with his paint roller on the TV show. Like, yeah. He's, well, this is naked children. What's wrong? What's
it's not 1490, what's wrong with you? It's, Cam. It's not 1490.
It's Leonardo da Vinci. This is a, you know, I'm just doing what da Vinci
what the
did.
What's the maestro? He's the maestro.
What's everyone's problem?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They frown on that now.
Yes. Now, one of the instruments that he designed drew together a variety of animals to make some sort of a dragon.
Sure.
It takes me back. Remember when he did the shield?
I just need a friend fucking of his father? Shield. Strong light. Yeah. Strap it on my arm. I don't need some goddamn three-dimensional thing. Just
anyone can have a shield. Yeah, like, come on. Like, if you're going to do it.
Anyone can have a liar.
You want to scare people. The best.
Make a fucking dragon.
What's that line? There's a line from something like, the best kind of fighting is when you don't have to fight.
Right.
It's like a, you know, best sort of.
Well, in America, we say the best offense is not having to fight. Is a good defense where you don't have to fight. Yeah, and so with something like this. But, with a shield that looks like what did the shield look like? It was just scary as fuck, right?
Yeah, it was a dragon. It was a dragon. It had all real animal parts on and whatever.
Yeah.
Got a tattoo of a dragon on his arm. Well, Sforza's coat of arms had a dragon swallowing a guy. Da Vinci was like, listen, the best for kind of shield,
right,
is the one that you don't have to use.
You just hold it
the
up.
The one that, just scares the fuck out of people. They're like,
And the best instrument that you hold up, they're like, where is he putting his mouth on that? Is he blowing? Is he strumming? Whatever. I mean, you throw pizzazz at him. And so it's a musical instrument that looks like a dragon. Only Leonardo would come up with that.
Another design in his notebooks is something that's like a violin, but it has three strings.
Sure.
And it's got a goat's skull, a bird's beak, some feathers, and the strings are fastened to teeth carved at one end of the instrument.
You didn't tell me he was a meth head. We could have made this series a lot shorter if you had just told me. Huge into meth. Invented, actually, meth. I mean, this is insane, but that's the way his brain works.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is the history of the violin goes sort of way back.
Oh, really?
But the modern violin was really invented, we think, like in the early 1500s. The earliest evidence for their existence is in paintings from the 1530s by a guy called Guidenzio Ferrari, and it only had three strings.
Thought he invented a car. Ferrari?
Yeah, that was after that. he invented one that only had three strings as well.
Right.
So, you know, it didn't run very well.
Right.
You needed that fourth string to really... get it up there.
Let me ask you a question. If you had shown Leonardo a Stradivarius, he probably would have went, that's shit. Yeah, it's shiny and it's pretty, but where's the goat's head? Where's the dragon shit?
Where's the feathers? Teeth?
Where's the beak? Yeah. You fucked it up.
Yeah.
You fucked it up.
Where's the teeth? There's no teeth.
Teeth. Anyway. Incredible.
You can't play an instrument.
You're embarrassing yourself. Don't just put it down.
Teeth?
Just put it down.
Yeah. It's never gonna work. I wonder if Leonardo actually invented the violin too. If he was like, you know what? Bored. It's a Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
Haven't done anything.
Finished with the
I think I'll
loincloth, guys, and now I'm just a bow.
There's no naked children around today. They're all in school. I think I'll invent a violin.
School days make me sad because all the kids are away.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You're not right. So he invented the violin. He also invented some other sort of mechanized bell thing.
Yeah.
It's like a big metal bell that's got two hammers on the outside and four dampers.
Damn.
That are on levers that were operated like keys on a piano.
Oh.
So you could...
Right.
Play the notes that you wanted, and it would hit the bell with different zones and different dampers and make different tones.
That's cool.
He says, when struck by hammers, there will be a change of tones like in an organ.
Right.
I was telling Chrissy about this last night. She said, I've played one of those. She was in a bell tower.
Right.
At a university somewhere where her father was a professor.
Doctor.
20, 30 years ago. Doctor Dunaway. And thank you very much. And I'm like, you're not really a doctor, right? You know, let's not, you know, you're perfect. A fucking choir master. Right, let's not, you know.
Master of a choir. Really, let's just stop right there.
Yeah. And even, you know, master is stretching a little bit.
Right. But still, so you were talking to her about it and she said she played one.
And she goes, yeah, I played one of those. I go, did they tell you it was invented by Leonardo? And she's like, no. But apparently, yeah, somebody has built those.
Yeah.
He built drums too. Do you want to talk about the drums?
Yeah, he had a set of drawings where he figured out to make it have changeable tension on the skins on a drum snare or a long cylinder that had holes in it like a flute. So not only can he have different tension on the skins to make a different tone or whatever, but it also had holes on the side. So it's like a flute. So it's like flute, violin, drum, all mashed together. I mean, and again, some of these weren't built right away. Some of these were just drawings in his notebooks, but they were very detailed. I mean, he could have taken it to the next step. But again, he was thinking about all these different ways to make all these different sounds to give people who play music as many options as they possibly could have. And again, he's just putting this stuff on his notebooks. And it's incredible. He's literally breaking all the barriers as he thinks these things up.
He wrote about this instrument, closing of the various holes while beating the skin results in clear pitch differences.
Right.
Now, no one knows more about various holes and beating skin than you, Ray.
He's not wrong. There's different tones and pitches that come out based on which hole you're plugging or skin you're pulling. Mm. It's all
back
pretty
when
elementary.
You were a,
right.
Back when you were a slave owner, you experimented a lot with beating skin and plugging holes.
Right. Now that I'm married, I am the BT. I liked it the other way better, but anyway.
Yeah, you're beating your own skin now because you can't get near the various holes.
It
That's
still
the
makes
problem.
Me an artist, so don't try to take that away from
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Oh, I don't judge.
Thank you.
He had another design where he lashed together 12 kettle drums of different sizes and then had a keyboard
right.
that allowed each drum to be hit with a mechanical hammer.
God damn.
Sort of the cross between a harpsichord and a drum set.
Or a musical machine gun. Remember when he lined up all the barrels and you would fire these 12 while these 12 were being reloaded? Whatever, it's the same thing. He's got 12 kettle drums. You could do different things with it. I mean, that's just him seeing what is currently existing and going, well, what if we do this? And then he writes it all down. And he makes it work in his diagrams.
And then he built the gun, the machine gun, on top of that. So he's like, you can play drums.
While you kill.
While you shoot people. See, this is why I'm a genius. Right. No one has ever thought about that before.
Now, it took me a while.
These ideas, they just come to me.
It took me a while to figure out I should have been shooting them with the machine gun because at first I was just shooting them with the instrument. It wasn't working while I was playing. Anyway, I got it figured out now. We can do music and kill people at the same time. So it's all straightened out, boss. Thank you.
One of the most complex instruments that he designed, and he worked on this a lot, there are 10 different pages of his notebooks
right.
with this on it, is something called the viola organista.
Nice.
It's a cross between a violin and an organ.
Like they had a baby.
So you...
Right. No, because I saw videos. Like Zeus, it was fucking amazing.
Zeus and Danae.
Fucking amazing.
Yeah. So you draw a bow across strings.
Right.
But the bow is being moved mechanically.
Yes.
And you press keys on a keyboard.
To make...
So...
Fucking awesome.
It's basically a synthesizer.
Right.
Is what he invented
right.
here. Right? You play it on a keyboard, but it sounds like a violin.
Yeah. I couldn't help but think someone like there's another engineer standing next to Leonardo going, I got an idea for a musical instrument. I can do it in two steps. Leonardo's like, I can do it in six. No, no, you didn't hear me. I can do it. Yeah, but six is better. Trust me, because it's more complicated that way and it will press the fuck out of people. Just get the fuck out of my way. I mean, that's what the, I mean, he's got keys controlling bows that are going across strings. I mean, good God, could it be any more complicated? But for him, like you said, it was a Tuesday. No big deal. And this was actually built in 2012. So there's some videos on YouTube. You can go check it out.
And it worked a little bit better than the giant crossbows.
A bit better. Yeah, it wasn't my cup of tea, but you could see him pressing the keys, and then you could see the things turning and going across the bows. So it fucking worked. It was built by a Polish pianist. God, you got to really be careful with that word, in 2012. So check it out on YouTube.
Anyone measure how big he was?
Pretty diminutive. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I don't like to judge. I'm not a judger.
No. Or a grower.
Or a shower. I'm sad. I'm sad. Anyway,
but of course, the thing with Da Vinci, of course, is when he's doing all of this, like with the people who flew up into the air in his stage designs, right. When he's working on musical instruments, it starts him thinking about vibrations and waves and sound waves, right. And water waves and light waves, and all of this makes its way into his notebooks as well, because he doesn't stop there. He's like, okay, well, I really need to understand how this works. I'm going to pick it apart. I'm going to study it. I'm going to figure out how this all, what are the fundamentals of this.
The commonalities.
No, it's not enough just to make something. Exactly. I need to deeply understand the fundamentals of this.
Deconstruct.
Like when he was painting skin and he needed to understand how light penetrates the skin and then reflects back what's under the skin. So you need to paint that if you want to accurately reflect skin in a painting.
Right.
All this kind of stuff. He's never content to just half-ass something. You know, he's got to go all the way.
Right.
Yeah. He's not going to ray his way through things. I would like to think that you would take some inspiration from this, but I know that's expecting too much.
You're not wrong. But you're right. I mean, everything is going to lead him to asking more and more questions to get a deeper understanding. And he wants more questions. He wants to be confused by something. He wants to keep drilling down. That's just who he is. And of course, in his notebooks, he captures as much of this as he can understand, given his level of technology at the time.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, Ludovico Sforza liked complex coats of arms, family emblems, that kind of thing, with metaphorical meanings stitched into them.
Yeah.
He owned a bunch of ornate helmets and shields with his personal symbols on them. He's a bit like Trump. He loved his own brand. He loved his own imagery. And LDV did a series of drawings in his notebooks that were designed to justify Sforza's role as the de facto ruler and then as the official ruler when he became Duke.
Mm-hmm.
But before Galeazzo died from fucking, one picture has him as a cockerel.
Right.
Apparently because the word for cockerel in Italian is galetto, which sounded similar to Galeazzo.
Sure.
What is a cockerel? Fox? The fox? No, what's your name? Ray? Ray. What is a...
Is that a young chicken? Cockerel?
Cockerel, yes. A young cock.
Young male chicken?
Small
cock.
Right. And we know Da Vinci was all about the small cocks.
You can take them all.
So he's got a picture where Galeazzo is depicted as a cockerel. He's being attacked by a swarm of birds and foxes and even a satyr.
Damn, right.
And he's being protected by two virtues, justice and prudence, which apparently represent Ludovico.
Right.
So he's designing propaganda for Ludovico. He's like Barry and Stan. Right. That's when he had the BSL agency. he's like, fuck artistic integrity. I'm selling out. I want the money.
Yeah.
I'll draw anything, paint anything, sculpt anything that you want. I just want to get paid.
Yeah.
I want the Melbas.
I want fame, fortune, coke, and cock. I mean, how do I get it? That's all I care about.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing that I found interesting. When we were talking earlier, we were saying that there wasn't a lot of personal detail in his notebooks. It's like, you know, was he a robot? Was he an automaton? Did he just not give a shit about himself? He was all about what I perceive the world to be or whatever, the natural laws or whatever. But it does he does have a lot of comments about envy in his books. And you don't have to read too much into that. Was he envious of the Duke? Was he envious of Ludovico? Was he envious of anyone who was rich enough or powerful enough to have enough influence or whatever to do whatever the fuck they wanted? Or was it just something, was it just a topic that fascinated him, like sound waves or anything like that? Of course, we'll never know, but he does mention a lot of envy into his notebooks, and he writes, "No sooner is virtue born than envy comes into the world to attack it." So again, and he goes on, "Envy should be represented with an obscene gesture of the hands toward heaven." So I don't know if because maybe he was illegitimate, he had to struggle with envy over his father's other legitimate children, who knows, but it seemed to be a topic that he would return to, and he seemed to feel very intensely about it, or at least it gets mentioned a lot in his notebooks.
What do you think his idea of an obscene gesture of the hands would be?
Either, I don't know when the invention of the middle finger came along. What about the old Italian, you know, you put your hand on your chin and do that? I have no idea. Or the old jerking motion. I'm not a gestureologist. I do them all. I do them all. I don't know. What do you do? You just roll your eyes.
Yeah, I invented my own because that's the kind of guy I am. I do this.
Just people, is he mad at me? Is he happy? Don't worry about it. Just
know what it means.
Oh, now it's getting complicated.
This represents the brain, and this is the prefrontal cortex.
And yours is messed. And you said it's messed up.
What I'm saying is, I think there's something wrong with your prefrontal cortex.
It's shaking when it shouldn't be.
Complicated.
It is. Maybe you should go with something simpler.
Speaking about envy, he says, "Victory and truth are odious to her. Many thunderbolts should proceed from her to signify her evil speaking. Let her be lean and haggard because she is in perpetual torment. Make her heart gnawed by a swelling serpent."
Damn.
"He drew her as a wizened hag with sagging breasts on the back of a crawling skeleton, accompanied with the words, 'Make her ride upon death because envy never dies.'"
Damn, I love that. I love that.
And on the same page, he has a drawing of envy intertwined with virtue, with a serpent springing forth from her tongue while virtue tries to stab her in the eyes with an olive branch.
God damn. Right.
Now, you mentioned some of the things that he could be envious about. This is, in fact, about him, we don't really know. Sure. But, you know, what about the success of the other artists out there? The people back in Florence
are finishing paintings?
Yeah, Botticelli and people like that. Now, mind you, while all this is going on while he's doing all of this in Florence, back in Florence while he's doing all of this...
Right.
Your old mate, the mad priest, is running around.
Savonarola.
Yeah, now, he died in 1498, so
he's still there.
Only a few years after a lot of this stuff is being written.
Right.
But Da Vinci's avoiding all of the Savonarola stuff because he's in Milan.
Good point.
He's not getting caught up in the gay bashing and the threats of the end of times and all this kind of stuff. So, he's lucky in many ways that he escaped all of that.
Yeah.
But I think he could be envious of the other artists that are more famous than him or getting better commissions maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe young boys he couldn't have. Maybe just the lives of the rich and the hetero. Like, who can...
That's my next show.
Fuck.
Right.
He can fuck with impunity,
right?
Without running the risk of going to jail. There's no reports of his sexuality in Milan that I'm aware of, or the risks. You know, like I'm sure Ludovico Sforza was as anti-homosexual as most Catholics were at the time, and still are, mm-hmm. actually, probably. So how Leonardo navigated that isn't really talked about a lot. Like, if he's yeah. gay, is he just being secretive about it? Careful. Is he just avoiding it altogether?
Well, what happens so behind the curtains trouble? Stays behind the curtains. I don't know. But but we said in the beginning of the second show, and I don't know if we really emphasize this enough. You can tell me. But Ludovico is like the whole pageantry and plays and entertainment in the court. That has been turned up to 11 for many different reasons we don't have to go into. Mostly he just needs a distraction and to justify why he's in charge. And so Ludovico is going to need engineers and people can do costumes and all those different things. And Leonardo can do all of them. So I can almost see Ludovico just turning a blind eye. Yeah, I've heard he likes the little boys or whatever. But as long as he's kicking ass and he's amazing my wife, and he's got the people distracted, I really don't care. I mean, I could be wrong with that, but I think he could probably get away with some stuff considering how talented he was and all the things that Ludovico really cared about. Who knows?
Possibly just after he nearly got arrested, he did get arrested, right? In Florence, after he nearly got harsh punishment, execution for it, maybe he just thought, okay, can't do that anymore. No. Need to put all my energy into my notebooks, into my work.
Right. In my right hand.
No.
Right.
Yeah. And I'll just tell people I'm measuring the size of their penises. So it's not gay if you're measuring.
Right. It's
and art. Surround myself with naked children. Right. That would be good.
Yeah.
Now, he did a very famous series of drawings of ugly people. He called them his visi mostruosi, monstrous faces.
Right.
Today, people just refer to them as his rays, the Ray Harris pictures.
Completely uncalled for. Right, yeah. The grotesques.
Now, I was looking at them, right? And I was like, look at that. Yeah. This looks like Ray.
It could be Ray in 10 years. Just, with the right.
Oh, now, actually. it just looks like
from a different side. Is it like, huh? Like this? Does this remind you of the paintings? Yeah? Okay. Son of a bitch.
Now, I've often wondered why he did these, and apparently most historians think he just did them for shits and giggles at the court.
Right.
He would go around drawing ugly people, and it'd be like taking secret selfies of people, secret photos, and just sharing them with your friends.
Right.
He was just like, hey, look at this. Look at this guy. Look at this face. Look, that's a real face.
Look at that face. Look at that. Yeah.
I'm George Clooney handsome, but this guy, look at that. Look at that. Look how ugly these guys are. Right, come on. Now, here's something that's I found fascinating. The 19th century British illustrator John Tenniel used Da Vinci or somebody who also used Da Vinci as the models for the ugly Duchess and other characters when he did the original illustrations for Alice's Adventures in Wonderland.
Damn. I need ugly, I need grotesque, I'm going to Leo. Because Leo, or like you said, a lot of people would either reproduce or be inspired by those drawings. So yeah, so I saw some of those pictures and they were butt ugly and yet funny at the same time. So
funny and ugly, yeah.
Right.
Now, Fugly. John Tenniel's interesting. He was the chief cartoon artist for Punch magazine. Oh, you ever heard of Punch?
I've heard of Punch. I don't know much about it.
It was around for 150 years. I think it was started in 1841 or something.
Right.
It became massive. Now, here's something. It actually popularized the term cartoon in the modern sense.
Oh, okay.
Cartoons come from Punch magazine. It was first used by Punch in 1843 when the Houses of Parliament were being decorated with murals. And when they were sketching murals that weren't finished yet, but they were doing sketches of it on cardboard to show the public what they would look like, they were called cartoons. Now, that came from the Italian word cartone, which means cardboard box, carton. Cool. Cartone, cartoon. And then Punch magazine appropriated that term for their own political drawings, became political cartoons.
And since it was
and that's where
– or paper.
Yeah, that's where the word cartoon comes from.
That's cool.
Tennille then went on to write the big hit "Do That to Me One More Time" about our time in Vegas when he had the band Captain and Tennille in the 70s.
Right, and I appreciate
Do that to me one more time. Once is never enough from a man like you.
I want it from behind. No, that was a different. Difference.
That was the Vegas version.
Yeah. I appreciate you dressing up like a sailor. That's what got me over the edge. Anyway, I digress.
Captain and Tennille joke for the kids who don't know Captain and Tennille. Look it up. Yeah.
Brother and sister also married having sex. No, I'm just joking. Anyway.
Now, how would Leo draw these ugly, but ugly faces, Ray? What was his process?
I'd love this. He would go out and he would find someone who, let's just say interesting faces. We don't have to be cruel. We don't have to be mean there. He would invite them home to his home for dinner. Now, I know what you're thinking, listeners. Oh my God, a banquet in their honor. Don't go. No, this is Leo we're talking about here. He's not going to do it. But anyways, he would take them home. He'd give them food and he'd give them drink and he would tell them the most outrageous stories, anything he could think to get them to laugh, to guffaw, to choke, whatever. And all these crazy distorted faces they would make, he would memorize. And as soon as they were gone, he'd go into his room, probably jerk off. But anyway, he would write it all down. He would write down what he saw. Already interesting or unattractive faces, making extreme faces, whether it's laughter or outrageousness or whatever. And so he would capture that. I think it's interesting that he just didn't use his imagination. Oh, picture a really ugly person laughing with most of their teeth missing or whatever. No, he would bring them in, make them laugh, memorize what he saw, and then draw from real life. Again, whatever he's doing it well, and he's doing it in great detail.
But he would do it from memory afterwards.
Yeah,
he would make
after
them laugh, they
yeah.
would leave, and then he'd sit down and draw it. Amazing.
Yeah.
In his notes on painting, Leonardo recommended that young artists do what he did, walk around town with a little notebook, take sketches of interesting things, interesting people. He wrote, take a note of them with slight strokes in a little book, which you should always carry with you.
Right.
The positions of the people are so infinite that the memory is incapable of retaining them, which is why you should keep these sketches as your guides.
Right.
Just walk around, taking little drawings, poses, faces.
Even then, he had to break that down into a science. And we don't have to go into this because I think we're getting close to the end. But he had like 12 whatever standard chins and a certain number of standard ears or nose or whatever, and it would be just close enough whereas he could remember that he could just do a couple of strokes. Later on, I'll remember this detail, but right now, just let me get a general impression of their nose, their ears, their jawline, and then he would go home and fill it in. But again, even the idea of quick sketches, he broke down into what we could call a science for later. So again, he took this stuff very seriously, and he was probably giving these young artists very good advice by thinking of it like that. It's not only art, but it's a science as well. Break it down, learn your moves, and you'll do a better job once you put everything together. The man thought everything through.
And speaking of science and thinking things through, one of the prevailing theories at the time, and this goes right back to the time of Aristotle, was that you could infer the character, the morals, or the intelligence of people from their face.
Or lack thereof.
It was a study called physiognomy. And Leonardo rejected that as being horse shit.
Right.
He said, I will not dwell on false physiognomy and palm reading because there is no truth in them.
Right.
And illusions of this kind have no scientific foundation.
Damn. Put it out there.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nailed it. Yeah. Astrology. I mean, fuck off with that stuff. Yeah.
That said, he did believe that characteristics of the face partly reveal the character of men, their vices and temperaments. If the features which separate the cheeks from the lips or the nostrils from the cavities of the eyes are strongly pronounced, they belong to cheerful and good-humoured men.
A pass. Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm trying to tell. Separate your cheeks from your lips.
I got the beard. That's not helping. What about the cheeks from the eyes?
The nostrils from the cavities of the eyes. I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. I don't see it.
he also said those whose facial features stand out in great relief are brutal, bad-tempered, and men of little reason.
Yes.
So I don't know how scientifically valid all of that is.
I was thinking about that. The most I could go was you can tell what's that saying? The eyes are the window to the soul. Yeah, if you can see someone's eyes, you can see expressions. Yeah, you can see what maybe is going on in their head at the time. Are they happy? Are they sad? Whatever. I think that's as far as I'm willing to take it. But since he studied people like no one else, he probably could read. He's probably a better people reader than a lot of CIA analysts. I wouldn't be surprised because, again, he took everything seriously.
Although there is no such thing as a soul, so then, that saying makes no sense.
Well, whatever the soul represents in that saying. So,
yeah,
you're forgiven.
What? Your brain?
The collective.
The eyes are the window to the brain.
The collective of the totality of the person.
Oh. The eyes are the window to the totality of the person.
It doesn't sing. It doesn't sing. That's not catchy, a good lyric.
Yeah. Get Barry and Stan on that. Barry, yeah.
And they're the ones who came up with soul. But anyway, I digress.
Music.
Yes. Where were we?
Well, I think we're running out of time. Okay. We're going to go on next time and talk about the little stories that he came up with for Sforza's court. He loved
that.
Little like fables, parables I mentioned earlier, prophecies, riddles.
Right.
His notebooks are filled with these things. There's hundreds of them.
Yes.
That he would come up with. What is black and white and red all over? A newspaper. That's a Da Vinci. He invented that.
I didn't know that.
It's probably his greatest invention.
Right.
But we'll talk about that next time. But I hope people are gathering from this. I don't know if people care about this stuff, but I find it fascinating.
Oh, absolutely.
That, you know, we think of Da Vinci as a painter. I think you say most people, Leonardo da Vinci, they think painter,
mm-hmm.
Mona Lisa, Last Supper. We explained at the beginning of this Leonardo series that in his head he was much more than that. He was architect, he was engineer, right. He was scientist. It turns out he's more than that as well. He's a musician. He's a gay, fabulous theater producer. He's a rapper.
Singer.
He's,
make shit up.
Yeah. He's you know, the Riddler.
Yeah.
Do it all.
And we're not done.
He's everything.
And we're not done. Yeah. That's amazing.
Neither's he.
And he's good looking.
He's not done.
Fuck him.
And he's not even into, you know, he hasn't even fucking painted anything worth thinking about at this stage, right?
Yeah.
He hasn't even sat down and painted anything.
He's warming up.
He's warming up.
Yeah.
He's in his late, mid-40s.
Yeah.
By 1494, mid-40s. Right. Hasn't even painted shit.
But he's found a lot of things that Ludovico likes. He's giving him what he likes. So now he's in the court. He's got some fame. He's got some money. So he has turned things around finally while he's in Milan.
Yeah. All right. Well, more on Leonardo next time. We're out. Ciao.